This is the American Sunshine Rag by Louis Altman.
Thought so.
Although, L-O-U-I-S with ragtime, I said Louis. Could it be Louis? Would you go Louis or Louis?
I'd go Louis, right? And Louis, because Louis is neat.
Yeah, but when you're down south...
That's right, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
This does have a French flair to it.
Well, it's called the American Sunshine Rag, not the French Sunshine Rag. Maybe he went by both. Maybe he was Louis and Louis, depending upon the situation. Maybe he code switched.
Mm-hmm. Can people hear this? You're not holding the mic by it.
Oh, yeah. Let me check. I'm using two computers here. So there may have just been a little gap in the music there. That was because I paused the music and paused the recording to see if I was actually recording at an okay level.
And you were.
Yes, I was.
You know. One of these days you're going to get really good at doing this show.
In about 2021. The way the program is right now, I can't actually hear the audio I'm recording.
It's because you're not wearing headphones.
If I wore headphones, I wouldn't be able to hear anything because the audio wouldn't come into them.
Oh, no?
No. That's why I'm not wearing headphones. I would, but I
can't. All this time, I thought, oh my God, why doesn't you wear headphones?
No, that's why, because they don't work. I'm sure it's just a matter of pressing a single button saying, yes, I want to use headphones.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what that button is.
We need like an official engineer. I think we need to upgrade around here.
Yes. I feel 100% like the guy who bought Photoshop and like has installed Photoshop. He's like, okay, well, that's step one. Step two is, and he opens up and sees 100 different things and like, oh, that's a lot. And then he just like uses a typing format.
Yeah, the most basic Photoshop thing you possibly do.
Yes. Like he writes happy birthday and he makes it green. Like, oh, okay, I Photoshopped that pretty good. I Photoshopped the hell out of this happy birthday sign.
We could. I mean, if we continue the show, we could do it. We get studio space and engineer.
Are you going to pay for that?
No. Not at all.
Okay.
No. Absolutely not. I think that's a problem. We need real sponsors, not these bullshit sponsors we have. We're always like fake 1917 sponsors. Damn it. Why are we not the Dollar Shave Club? Where's the Dollar Shave Club? They do every podcast.
It should be the Penny Shave Club from 1917.
Are you tired of paying a whole nickel for razor blades?
And stamps.com is just hiring a poor man to lick your stamps.
I feel like you know a company's bad by their willingness to sponsor a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by Me Barrels. It's the precursor to Me Undies. Underwear too expensive? Just get a big barrel and
there's the spanners.
That's all you need. I have been told by a number of drawn sources over the years this was how poor people dressed back in the day.
Mm-hmm. As soon as the pressure hit, first thing everybody did, sold all their undergarments and just got barrels.
Now, the drawing of the barrel that people wore was not the drawing of like actual barrels. Actual barrels are like waist high.
Yeah.
So if you wear it waist high, it barely goes to mid-calf.
No, it's it goes from your shoulders.
Uh-huh, okay. Shoulders down to like, above the knee.
Or above the knee, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'd say.
Okay, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I was...
I mean, if you're tall or particularly endowed, there could be an issue.
Right. Right, or if you're particularly short, you'd be barking your shins on the ends of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I mean, she was being very heavy to wear a barrel.
Yeah, and... Who has a barrel but doesn't have clothes to the point where they never had clothes? Because it's not just like wearing old clothes. It's full on like
wearing a barrel.
Yeah.
Most uncomfortable thing. And was that accepted? Like, could you go into a store wearing a barrel? And people saw this as a suitable clothing replacement.
I want to know how much a barrel cost, because like you can get like a used pair of pants at Goodwill for what, $4 or $5?
Well, this isn't a new barrel; it's an old barrel.
It's an old barrel.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's not like they walked into the store like, oh, pants are $6, but a barrel's only $4. I could save two whole dollars by barreling myself up. Plus, I live at the bottom of a hill, so, you know, it's so much more convenient.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but it sucks, you know, having to go to work, because then you got to climb.
Yeah.
While holding a barrel.
But maybe it was...
One misstep, boom, you're home again.
Well, the downside of the people who live where they had to walk uphill both ways, maybe there was someone else in the other physical world where they went downhill both ways, and those were the people who wore barrels, mm-hmm. because they got a free ride.
Yeah.
They just couldn't eat beforehand.
Yeah, you know,
vomitous.
There's part of me, it's like, all right, do you show, we have 10 shows left for this year.
Mm-hmm.
Do we continue the show into 1918? But I also think we need more stunts. I think one of the stunts is we need, like, a barrel. We need have one show where we wear a barrel. You know, we could be like shock jocks.
Now, sitting while wearing a barrel, which is what we would do if we were broadcasting with a barrel, that has its own challenges because barrels don't bend. The barrel would
We would stand for the show.
You would stand?
No, this is going to be big. It's like our big live remote broadcast that we would do.
Wearing barrels?
Barrel fest.
Did you know that 100...
Hold on. We didn't introduce the show yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. As always, I've forgotten the introduction. Welcome to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and with me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy, hoy. I'm wearing the shirt. Did you notice?
Yeah, I know. So I remember the... Yeah. That's sparked.
Ah.
Yeah.
So this week, 100 Years Ago Today, the U.S. had its first casualties in World War I. Every week we'd been following the slow march into the U.S. entering the war and then sending soldiers overseas and then the soldiers being deployed. And now the inevitable has happened. Three soldiers have died in the trenches in France. And they're the first of many, many soldiers. Apparently, up until this point, Woodrow Wilson still kind of thought we could just get out of it. We'd send a whole bunch of people over. They'd look around and say, boy, what a great war you got here. Okay, see you later. And then just get on a boat and leave. And now that people are dead, that's not going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't just leave dead people in a battlefield. You need to go and win the battle. And now the U.S. has blood on its hands. The big story this week, and I'm going to apologize in advance because I'm getting this thing as wrong can be, is the Balfour Declaration.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do any research to correct you one way or another.
No, you didn't do the 9 minutes of research I did about 100 years of Israeli-Palestinian history?
No.
No? Okay. Well, here goes my 9 minutes.
And, you know, here's the thing. If we go into Palestinian history and the history of that region, there's no way we could say anything incorrect that people might find offensive, right?
No, there's no arguments that ever get started over the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
All right.
Yeah, there's no disagreements. Everyone's on the same page. Everyone's very forgiving. Mm-hmm. It's an easy topic. Next week we'll do abortion, by the way. So, Palestine in 1917 is one of the places that's owned by the Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that works on maps. I don't know if it says if Ottoman Empire is just one giant amorphous blob or if there's distinct countries and then they're all kind of colored the same way to show that they're all linked up as part of the Ottoman Empire.
I don't know. I always remember seeing the Ottoman Empire in a lot. Usually World War I maps.
Yeah.
It's pretty massive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's probably the similar how we do states. Like New York is different than New Jersey, but there's still like a line separating them. You mm-hmm. can tell where one is than the other.
Yeah.
You don't just pretend it's a giant amorphous America.
So, why Ottoman?
Maybe they really enjoy putting their feet up at the end.
Oh, okay, I thought maybe you actually did some research on that. That seemed like the kind of thing you would know
about why they're called Ottoman.
Yeah, like I would ask why Ottoman, you'd have an answer for me on this.
No, but I'm assuming that the little tuffet thing goes the other way around. That they were named after the Ottoman Empire.
Well, I figured that, yeah. I didn't think that they would name it after like a footstool.
Yeah, well, now I'm not sure if the footstool was called the Ottoman because it looked like one of the onion domes that you would see in Central Asia, or if it's just that's what so many people in the Ottomans used. If, like, I've never been to Istanbul or anywhere else in Turkey, but I don't know if it's just, like, crowded with footstools.
It's just, you know, it's a region that really values their comfort. That's why they wear so many, like, you know, long flowing robes. You breathe. A little breathing down there.
So, Palestine was was owned by the Ottomans. There was a small Jewish population, but most people were Palestinian Arabs, which makes sense because the country was Palestine. The Brits figured, if we win the war, we are basically going to own Palestine. So we've got to do something with it. And the Brits had a long history, and they're continuing the history as you go through the rest of the 20th century, of making somewhat bad decisions when it comes to divvying up land. They did the same thing in India with partition, where the idea is good in theory, but in practice, that's where they drop the ball. So this is the theory. We don't yet have the practice where they're dropping the ball, but the theory is very sound, which is that for about 100 years, the diaspora of Jews around the world, especially in Great Britain, have been trying to get their own land, their own territory. And there's a group called the Zionist Federation of Great Britain and Ireland. They were founded in 1899, but that was as an umbrella group of all the other groups. So they're all working together to try to get British politicians to push for a Jewish homeland. And the Balfour Declaration was Arthur Balfour, who was the foreign secretary, who's like our Secretary of State, writing a letter. And it's a short letter. I can read the entire thing to
No,
you.
Please don't. God, no.
But I could also do it in a very posh accent. Or does that sweeten the deal, or does that make it sound even worse?
I'll tell you could start with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll step in if I think it's going to, you know. I feel like I should be the quality control on this one.
Okay. I think the letter is important, because it's a very short letter. And at the same time, it was meticulously worded. And at the same time, they forgot to add a whole bunch of important stuff that would belie what they seem to be meticulously wording about. So let me see if I can find the actual letter.
Do you use any source other than Wikipedia? Do you do any sources other than Wikipedia?
Yes, I have a book upstairs of pictures from the 1910 to 1920 area. I can bring it down. It's fascinating. It'd be fun to flip through.
Is it like only photos?
It's photos, and there's some captions also. And I thought we could do a whole episode about it, but It's photographs, and this is a podcast.
Mm-hmm. So it would be us describing photos.
Yes, the very best we could do is, and now if you Google IMG 3024789 5, you'll see this really great picture of Tom Mix.
Shape and haircut, two bits. Who are you going to marry? Tom Mix.
Ooh, I haven't heard that variety.
Oh, no. My grandfather used to do that one. Most people don't know there's a second verse to Shaving the Haircut.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Did your grandpa marry Tom Mix? Or was that a little too Stalag 17 for him? Yeah.
They didn't even know gay people existed. What are you talking about? They had no idea. They were like in 1917, they were leprechauns, basically.
Okay. The Balfour Declaration.
Hold on. That is not British. Start over.
That's not British?
No. That was there was like someone almost like Scandinavian in there.
Okay. The Balfour Declaration. Foreign Office, November 2nd, 1917. Dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you, on behalf of His Majesty's Government, the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet. His Majesty's Government view with favour the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use best endeavours to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done with any prejudice, or that may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political statute enjoyed by Jews in any other country. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. Yours sincerely, blah, 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 blah.
You sound like an IKEA commercial.
You thought that was too Scandinavian?
Yeah, it really was. It was.
I can't really do a Scandinavian voice, but I guess you if just, I try to do an English voice, it turns just into Scandinavian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I also realize the word Zionist, while not, anti-Semitic, I think only gets used by anti-Semites now.
Yes, I've thought about this also. My wife is Jewish, and I go to a Seder every year. And I have conversations about Jewish matters with everyone who's there. But I still have a very hard time using the word Jew as a noun the way actual Jews use the word Jew as a noun. Mm. Because I've heard too many people say it, like, offensively and under their breath. So I feel like I don't want them to think I'm anti-Semitic, even though they probably don't.
Well, you said Zionist. There was something like Alex Jones in there.
Yeah, I don't understand a lot of the like anti-Jewish prejudice. I don't understand a lot of the stereotypes. So because of that, the word just seems so foreign. I want to stay away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than try to figure out what it means and figure out exactly what the prejudice is.
Do you really not understand like Jewish stuff? Isn't that like I've never noticed them. I don't.
No. I mean the specifics. Like I read a book called The Plot, which is all about the protocols of the Elders of Zion and how that got disseminated out as an anti-propaganda piece.
Here's what I think. I think you got this book. You read two chapters and stopped reading this book. And now you're telling people you read this book.
It was a graphic novel and it was like 81 pages. So I did read the whole thing.
There's a graphic novel of it?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Will Eisner did it.
Mm-hmm.
Were
the Jews mice in this one?
No, the Jews were Jews in this one. But it was just a bunch of Russian guys who are looking for ways to discredit Jews. To build up their own case because they wanted to have a scapegoat. And then Henry Ford believed them, and he started to basically reprint and expand upon the protocols of the Elders of Zion in Dearborn, Michigan. So he was a card-carrying anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should card serve back then.
I'm using two computers right now, and I usually print out the information that I read, but it's on one of the computers. So and the two computers have slightly different touchpads.
Yes.
So I'm trying to use one touchpad the way one navigates on the other one, and there's just so much cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, this isn't really that effective a way of doing a show, but
no.
I will say when you have two computers, it's much... You look like you're doing something more important than you actually are.
Yeah, yeah. I always enjoyed that feeling of seeming to be doing a lot of stuff. I remember in college, I would be playing music while I had the TV on, while I was playing a video game on the computer, all at the same time. And I felt like I was being so productive. But I was not being productive. I was just being unproductive three different ways simultaneously.
You're tripling down on your lack of production.
Yeah. Yeah, the same way that if you're drinking a beer and eating Cheetos, you're not being doubly productive. You're just taking two things you shouldn't be doing and combining them.
What do you prefer, the crunchy Cheetos or the puffy ones?
Most of my Cheeto experience recently has been the small, crunchy ones.
Those are better.
They are better.
I always think of the puffy ones, like trash. And like if you're, think about when you went to a kid's house and they had Cheetos there.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, they were puffy ones. That they were a white trash family.
So do we become a white trash family if we get the puffy Cheetos?
If your family has puffy Cheetos in this house right now?
Yes.
You're white trash.
White trash, okay. And how many Cheetos do I need to eat before we're no longer white trash? The bag have to be like totally dusted, or if there was still like one serving left?
Look, in all honesty, you bring puffy Cheetos into your house. Even when the bag's gone, that Cheeto dust still remains for years. You'll be vacuuming Cheeto dust for years after that. It's like having a live Christmas tree. You still find those pine needles 3 years later.
I bet someone has decorated a live Christmas tree with puffy Cheetos. That would be a super white trash thing to do. You know how people decorate it with popcorn?
Oh, yeah, hold on. Do you think live Christmas trees are white trash?
No.
No, me neither.
No. No. That's the opposite. In that case, I feel like synthetic Christmas trees are white trash.
Yes.
But at the same time, I know people have synthetic Christmas trees.
Do you do real or fake?
We do real every year.
I do real as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife's been pushing for a fake, but I told her I didn't marry no trash.
So, back to the Balfour Declaration. I wanted to say, call it full-on, like, Israel or Palestine, but Palestine was already around. Israel isn't going to be around for another, like, 30 years. But calling this this whole episode, the Balfour Declaration. I feel like if you know what it is, you know that's important. But otherwise, it's like, what is that? That's not a good name, but it's an important name.
Well, maybe we call it future
Israel, the birth of Israel.
Well, yeah, well, that's much less offensive than what I was going to say. Good idea.
So the Brits started. Well, they didn't start the war. Gavrilo Princip started the war in 1915. But since the war began, the Brits were realizing they were going to have to do something with this land. And all throughout 1917, they'd been talking in secret, not just with the Zionist Federation, but with other world leaders to figure out what to do about it. And it took them a while, but they got Woodrow Wilson on board in mid-October. That was one of the things that was really holding them back from making the announcement any earlier. Another one was that they had been deadlocked in fighting in Palestine for about 6 months, and they didn't want to announce, like, we're going to have an Israeli state in Palestine when it looked like they weren't going to win the war. You know, it's like if you went out and said, I'm now looking for options to play for the Brooklyn Nets. Like, was anyone hiring you before? Does this need to be mentioned? Does this just make you look like a jackass? I was trying to find a parallel for what was going on with the Jewish people 100 years ago. And I think there's one in the Roma people, who are sometimes called gypsies, but that's an offensive term.
Gypsies and, offensive?
Yeah. Yeah, partly because it comes from the word Egyptian, which they are not. They're not Egyptian. And partly because that's where the word gyp come from, like to rip someone off.
Yeah.
And that's, it's offensive well, that's to use the word rip someone off and to well, describe them.
Gyp is offensive. Yeah. Gypsy isn't. It's like, you know, it's like, all right, is the word Jewish offensive?
No.
No. But if we're saying like, you know, you Jew somebody down, that's offensive there.
Yes, but the thing is, they're called the Roma. They prefer the word Roma.
Because they roam.
I don't know where that comes from. It's very close to Rome, like the city in Italy. But they're, like you said, they roam all over the place. They don't have like a homeland. But if you tried to give them a homeland, there's a couple of problems. One is where would you pick as a homeland?
I'm not buying by, I'm by, hold on, so no, I'm sorry. I'm not buying that gypsy's an offensive term. I think you're wrong.
I'm positive that it's an offensive term. But it's something that doesn't come up very often because you don't talk about the Roma people very often.
There really is a must. Like, in my mind, it's an offensive term, but it's not Eskimo. We discussed this, though, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we did it. We thought Eskimo was an offensive term, but it's not. We're talking about Eskimo pies.
Well, I think it's like a secondhand offensive word because Inuit is preferred, but really Inuit is still a global term for everyone who lives up there. There's different tribes and
nationalities. We need to find a gypsy to settle this.
Let's just say Roma instead of gypsy. Just on the theory, which is fact, that saying the word gypsy is offensive. And every time we say it, just makes it a little bit worse.
It's been a while since I was in Europe.
Okay.
But I remember that being thrown around pretty freely over there.
There's a big neo-Nazi movement in Europe. I'm not sure if you're aware of. Europeans aren't necessarily the standard bearer for liberalness.
I was on a train in Italy.
Okay.
And a group of Roma.
You did it. You did it. Good, good.
Came up. Not knowing a straight face, but I'm doing it. they came out like a family,
okay,
of Roma,
mm-hmm.
And they were begging. Is begging offensive to say? Is it offensive to say the Roma were begging?
No,
okay,
no. That's one of the reasons why there's so much prejudice against the Roma, because if you see someone, you often are seeing them begging, and you don't have any mm-hmm. other. A clue about what their society or what their life is like, other than that these are just like an entire race of homeless people that are trying to take money from you.
Yeah, so they're walking around begging on the train, and we're like traveling to like the Italian countryside. Like this is the Italian equivalent of like Iowa, pretty much. Okay. Where there's just nothing around.
Yeah,
you know, except whatever they grow in Italy. Mm-hmm. Broccoli Rob. There's Broccoli Rob. Farms everywhere as we were traveling through. And suddenly the train stopped. And this family, like little kids, mm-hmm. they just threw them right off the train.
Ooh.
And you saw them just like standing out in a Broccoli Rob field. And like left
and
behind.
It wasn't like a train station?
It wasn't like, oh, you're getting off the next station. It was, we're letting you off in the middle of nowhere.
See, that's the prejudice right there.
But they were begging.
They shouldn't have been begging on the train, but at least get them to the next station.
Mm-hmm.
Because they probably paid for their ticket to get on, because that's how you get on a train. You need to pay for it, right?
Yes. I don't know. Maybe I'm sure they have a pretty strict no begging. I mean, yeah, if you go on like New York subway, they don't like leave you off in the middle of a subway tunnel. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the reasons why there's so much prejudice against this group of people is that they don't have any political power. They don't have any like country or any homeland to say this is where we're from, this is where we can go to and build permanent residence and not be persecuted for living amongst everyone else.
Hold on, I'm looking up, is Gypsy a slur?
Okay. Because I'm Irish, I also saw parallels.
Oh, is Gypsy a slut came up instead. Hold on.
If you were looking for even more evidence about the prejudice, that autocorrect may help you. Autocorrect is the prejudiced person's best friend.
Well, what do you know?
It is?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's an offensive, derogatory term for a group of people called the Romani or Roma.
There we go.
I have no idea. I stand corrected. I have a lot of people I met in Europe that I need to apologize to. I'm sorry.
So
I mean, I was nice to them. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'd be like, oh, here you go, gypsy. Have some money. I was being nice about it.
Yes. So I'm Irish, and I grew up hearing about all of the troubles going on in Northern Ireland, and I think I always thought that there were parallels between what was going on in Israel and Palestine and what was going on between Ireland and Northern Ireland and England, which is that there's two different people who both want land. One person had the land for a long time, and then another more recent group came in, just sat down and said, no, this is our land now.
Mm-hmm.
And the parallels extended because the people who wanted their land back started to do bad and terrible things in order to get the land back. And the bad and terrible things not only didn't work, but it hurt their case because they're just setting off bombs. And setting off bombs is never a good argument. It's, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm not sure about the situation. Like, well, what if I bombed your people? Well, now you've convinced me. Now I think that your argument is rational and lucid, and I'm going to see your side. It just makes people more entrenched against you. And the people trying to make the argument now have a losing case.
But nothing's really changed in Ireland, but they stopped doing that.
Yeah.
The people just need to be like, you know, we don't really feel like doing this fight anymore.
This is where I really was not paying that much attention. And I think this is where a lot of like prejudice comes in. I felt like, well, I know who the good guys and who the bad guys are in this. Therefore, I don't need to pay attention to the actual facts of the case.
Well, who do you think the good guys and bad guys were?
Well, the good guys were the Northern Irish and the bad guys were the English. Now, I excluded the people setting off bombs from good guys. Even though they were advocating for the cause that I was
believing. That you believe in, yeah. Now, did you actually really believe in this cause, or are you going, I'm Irish, so I have to believe in it?
No, I'm Irish, so I have to believe in it, because they're fighting.
But you don't really see him in any of this.
Right, right. If you showed me a map of Ireland and said, okay, where in Northern Ireland are they fighting, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I saw on maps, like, oh, wait, no, that's part of England, that's not part of Ireland. And then when someone said, that's what Northern Ireland is, you'd be like, oh, well. Well, maybe it's not Ireland, then, if it's not in Ireland.
I feel the same way about Jersey and Staten Island, actually.
I feel like Staten Island belongs to New Jersey.
No, we don't want it.
No one wants Staten Island, but someone has to take it.
I always feel like the New Jersey stereotype is actually Staten Island.
Yeah.
Like, when people think of Jersey and describe it in offensive terms,
mm-hmm.
It actually is Staten Island.
I've had this exact same conversation with someone from Staten Island, and he said all the offensive stereotypes about Staten Island are actually about Bayonne.
Let me tell you. I've traveled all over our parts as a comedian.
As a rambling man.
There's no place I hate going to more than Staten Island.
Yeah.
There's no place worse than Staten Island.
It is far away.
Like, when I know I have a show coming up. Bubble. When I have a show coming up in Staten Island, I'm dreading it. Just dreading. Like, this room full of, like just cops on the take. Every single one of them. It's an entire, like, borough. Where everyone's a cop, which you think was, oh, that must be nice. No. Because it's not the nice cops. It's the cops who just, like, you know, do the old, like, come on, move it along. Move it along type cops.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's every single one of them is in crowd control division.
In my head, I've retconned that the Punisher is from Staten Island. Because it just seems right that all the other boroughs have their own superheroes. But Staten Island gets the Punisher.
This is like your fanfic that you're doing?
Yes. if someone ever asked me, like, so if there was like a war of the five boroughs, which superheroes would represent each one? Like, well, the Punisher for Staten Island, obviously.
You know, I've met many of your friends, like your other friends, not cool people like me.
Yeah.
You've been asked this question, haven't you?
No, I haven't. This is the first time I get to expand upon it. Oh. Yes.
All right. Because, hold on. I'll indulge you. So, Jeff, okay.
Yes.
If there were more between superheroes, which borough would have which superhero?
Well, see, of course, Spider-Man has Queens.
And by the way, why is it a war? Can they just be running for mayor or something?
They could be running for mayor. That would be interesting.
Okay.
So, Spider-Man's from Queens. Captain America is from Brooklyn. All of the Fantastic Four and Doctor Strange and all of the rest of the Avengers all live in Manhattan. There's no shortage of Manhattan heroes. I don't know if anyone lives in the Bronx right now.
Nobody's a Bronx superhero?
No.
There's got to be somebody in the shadows of Yankee Stadium or up in, like, Pelham.
Yeah, I'm weak on the Bronx, but I'm very firm on the belief that Frank Castle is from Staten Island.
Why?
Well, one, he's Italian. He was originally Castiglione. Which means punishment, which was a nice little bit of connection that someone found like 20 years into writing The Punisher, that his name means punishment. Another is that he was in law enforcement, so that explains why he would be living there. A third is that they always showed him living in like a suburban house, but he's living in New York City, and that's where you would go if you want to be in a suburban house but still be a New York City resident.
Mm-hmm.
And it also just... He's hunting the mob a lot, and there's a lot of organized crime in Staten Island.
This all makes sense.
Yeah, it see?
I was gonna lay it for your theory, but no, it really works.
No, it's a strong theory.
Mm-hmm. Can you just... Is it definitely New York, though?
Yeah, he's definitely in New York.
Okay, so you could also make the argument that he's in Jersey, too.
Yeah, you could do that, but no, there's too many Jersey jokes, and there have been no Jersey jokes about the Punisher, so... That doesn't travel.
Are there any Jersey superheroes?
Not really.
No?
No. No, there was...
What about Toxic Avenger?
He's a New Jersey superhero, but he's not in the Marvel universe. Steel, briefly, you know when they made the Shaquille O'Neal movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was briefly in Jersey City.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shaquille's from, Shaq, as soon as we call him Shaquille, Shaq.
Yeah, Shaq.
Shaq is, he's from Jersey.
Yeah, he's from Newark.
Or another, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but this wasn't the movie Steel was different than the comic Steel. In the comic, he was like a weapons designer. He basically had the Tony Stark storyline, mm-hmm. where he stopped making weapons and he started to make defensive stuff, and he made a big suit for himself.
But they thought it was a little odd to have Shaq play a guy who's like an engineer or something.
Yeah.
Oh. Why is that 7-foot-tall man?
And he is a wonderful human being, but he is such a bad actor, I didn't believe he was tall. Okay, on to our Nickelodeon this week. And this is a special...
Shazam! Sorry, Jack.
I actually wanted to front load this to let you know, if you have to sit through the whole conversation about Palestine and Israel, you then get rewarded with farts, because our Nickelodeon is going to be a performance by Le Petomane.
Okay.
Do you know who Lepeto Maine is?
This has nothing to do with Blazing Saddles?
No. Huh. No. He was the highest paid performer in France. He retired right around 1917 because he was so horrified by what was going on in World War I, but specifically he was horrified by the gas attacks. And he did not want to be associated with that because he was a fartist. He performed in Moulin Rouge, and he's actually a character playing him is briefly in the 2001 movie Moulin Rouge.
Never seen it.
You never saw Moulin Rouge?
No.
Wow.
You know, at this point, I don't really feel like I need to. Like, you know, there's too many other things I have to see.
Okay.
Why would I bother at this point? I get the gist of it. It's France. You remember it, Preserve.
Okay. It's 32 seconds long. But you're going to be able to see.
Well, I can see him, too. It's not just.
Oh, yeah. It's a video. He was around during this age.
That was the character Blazing Saddles named after him?
Yes.
All right. That makes sense.
He was. It was a deep cut.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the ability. This isn't traditional intestinal gas. I was just reading up on it. He was basically able to, like, you know how you can just suck it.
I've heard about people blow it out. Have this ability to suck air into their.
Yes, but he's doing this the other way around.
I wonder how fast could he do, like, you know, Wing Tail Overture or, you know, Flay the Bumblebee?
He could. Oh, no. Oh, no. I just realized this is before the era of sound. We just see a man leaning.
You really picked something to do for a podcast.
Yes.
That involved no sound. So I'm watching right now. I'm watching a video of a man in tuxedo crouching.
He's crouching and leaning over into a big old-fashioned megaphone-style microphone.
But he didn't like the idea of being associated with gas attacks.
No,
did anybody actually associate him with gas attacks?
I don't think so. No, I think he was just looking to retire. Okay. But he considered himself a very classy performer. He didn't like crude jokes, which is funny, considering he literally farted on stage. But he considered himself an impressionist. So he would...
Like, you do an impression of somebody else farting?
He would do impressions of people saying, like, here is the young bride, and you go, and you go, here is the matron.
And you just know there was, like, guys there who thought he was just such a hack. Like, there's you know, there was like the Bill Hicks of farting that just hated Lepetamine.
There was one guy who had a heart attack watching this. He was laughing so hard.
A fart attack.
There were women who would repeatedly like pass out from laughter. This was also in the age when they were wearing corsets, so it's much easier to pass out.
I don't know for a fact on this, but I imagine that it did not smell his farts. Because they're not coming from deep within.
What I was reading said, yes, he's not. It's not intestinal gas. It's just actual air that's moving in and then moving right out.
Yeah. So
there was no odor involved. I'm kind of amazed that there's not an American version of this guy.
There is. Well, actually, he's British.
He's British. Yeah, he's not American. Mr. Methane. Yes,
yeah.
We don't. If I told you there was someone who made his living just going on stage and breaking wind for audiences, you're like, oh, well, where in America is he performing? He has to be an American.
Branson.
Yes. Some of the highlights of Lepeto Maine's stage act involve sound effects of cannon fire and thunderstorms, as well as playing O Solo Mio and La Marseillaise on an ocarina through a rubber tube in his anus. He also blew out a candle from several yards away. His audience included Edward, Prince of Wales, King Leopold II of Belgium, and Sigmund Freud.
I find it interesting in the video that he faces the audience.
He was a showman.
Yeah. I like the idea of, like, you know, you're bending out so they could see your instrument more.
He performed in a full tuxedo, and partly that was to class up his routine, and partly because he needed to, like, really, like, clench down in order to do this.
If you were a fart performer,
yes,
would you face the audience or face away?
Oh, I would face the audience. Okay. I think it's a sign of respect. Even though you're getting paid to fart, you're not getting paid to fart on people. That's considered rude.
Okay, all right. So you're thinking, yeah. I would go for, like, a Miles Davis kind of thing.
I'm pretty sure that on Monday morning around 10:30, Lepeto Maine sits next to me. at work. I just have a feeling there's a variety of sounds that I'm hearing, and just as to your quantity of distinct sounds is like, wow, I should be keeping tally of this. Oh, in his later days, L'Epetomane opened up a biscuit factory in Toulon.
Oh, good. There's a happy ending on this.
Yes. On to our quiz. Our quiz this week, because we're talking about the Israeli-Palestine conflict, we're going to talk about famous Israelis and famous Palestinians. Unfortunately, when I looked at this list, a huge number of people were either politicians or, like, bombers. So I've left off anyone who has killed someone.
And I'm guessing, are they Palestinian or Israelis at this?
There's both.
Okay, so I was guessing either or.
In that case, it's like a two-part quiz.
I'm in that Tarantino movie where I'm the Jew hunter or something.
I'll give you the clue. You then guess who the person is, and then also tell me if they're Israeli or Palestinian. Okay, this Asian-American actress was Queen Amidala in Star Wars.
You're saying Natalie Portman, right?
I said Asian-American, yes.
She's Asian-American?
Yes, because...
Oh, that's right, she's Israel.
Yes, because Israel and Palestine are both in Asia.
That's right.
Everyone we're going to talk about are Asians or Asian-Americans.
Okay, yes, yeah, so she's Israeli, that's right.
Yes. This rapper is known for his positive messages and songs like All I Do Is Win.
I don't know.
DJ Khaled.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that guy. He's that, little fat guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's Palestinian.
He's Palestinian, yes.
Okay.
He's
the guy who always yells his name.
Yes, yeah. This guy is a famous violinist.
Yitzhak Perlman.
Yes.
He's the only one I know.
I figured. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would have given you more, but how many famous violinists mm-hmm. are there? And is he Israeli or Palestinian?
He's Israeli.
Yes. Our next
and he's crippled, too.
Yes.
Okay.
I was going to say the violinist who's always sitting down. next is a spoon-bending fake psychic. He would call himself a spoon-bending psychic. I added the fake
part. Well, yeah, that's sort of redundant. I think all psychics are kind of fake. That guy, what's his name? Jonathan Edwards.
No, he's a different sort of fake. Uri Geller.
Oh. I've never heard of Uri Geller.
He apparently has a phenomenal memory, but he also will, weeks before you attend his show, he'll send out a little flyer saying, tell me about yourself. But it's the theater is asking you to tell you something about yourself. So you fill out the flyer and you send it in. And he, because he has a great memory, can remember all this stuff for the show and remember the seating arrangement. So he'll point to someone and they'll stand up and he'll start telling them stuff about
themselves. Yeah, that's kind of what they all do, right?
Right.
I feel like the psychic thing is sort of dying off. There's a period where, people love psychics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're just sort of going away now.
I
think people are getting more, aware of them.
Right. Well, nowadays, if I went to see a psychic and I stood up and they said your favorite show is Parks and Recreation, I'd be like, you're just taking this from my YouTube or from Facebook or from some social media thing. I've accidentally shared something, and it would just be annoying. It wouldn't be impressive
mm-hmm.
because we see so much seemingly psychic stuff that we know can't be actual psychicness. I was having an issue a couple of
weeks ago. Is Parks and Rec your favorite show?
It is one of my favorite shows.
That's okay.
I was having an issue a couple of weeks ago where I jokingly talked about adult diapers, and I started to actually see ads for adult diapers.
Yeah.
And
so I remember you saying you're convinced they're listening to you.
I'm convinced they're listening to me, because I didn't type the word adult diaper anywhere. I just said it out loud. But I said it in front of a computer and possibly two computers.
There's videos going around now of people experimenting with this.
Oh, there are.
Of talking while on just random topics
mm-hmm.
and then seeing it pop up in their Facebook ads.
Wow. Yeah. Now, I've looked and my microphone is not turned on. So I haven't shared the like mic ability with this. So whoever is listening in is not supposed to be listening in. And according to the phone, it's not, which I guess is what a proper spy would do. You know, if you go into a room and ask, are there any ghosts here, you're not supposed to say no. You're supposed to stay silent. Okay, back to the quiz. Former governor of New Hampshire and former Bush 41 cabinet member. He was also parodied in Naked Gun 2.5.
Oh, he's a big guy. That's how I know. they do a John Sununu.
John Sununu, yes. We share a brain. That's how I knew you get it.
I know my Naked Gun movies, I guess.
I was in New Hampshire one time, and we were in whatever the town is where his office is. And I saw the office where there's a sign saying, like, Office of John H. Sununu II. And I got so excited. He was like, oh, this guy was in Naked Gun 2.5. Or, you know, not really, but he was
parody. I remember they got, if I remember correctly, they got a pretty good Sununu impersonator for it.
Yeah, that was a dynamite career for about 2 years. What do you do? Well, I look like John Sununu. People pay me for it.
At least I like to.
So is he Israeli or Palestinian?
Israeli.
Palestinian.
Okay.
Born in Cuba, but his family is Palestinian. Hmm. This next person's an actress. We just saw her in Wonder Woman.
What's her name? I don't. It's two G's.
Yes, two G's. Not Gina Gershon.
No.
Not Greta Gerwig.
Gail. Is that right? Gal.
It's Gal.
Gal.
Yes.
Gal.
Gal Gadot.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, and she's Israeli. Yes. Because that hurt seeing you get that, so mm-hmm. I'm just going to give it to you. Director of weird cartoons like Fritz the Cat.
Oh, Ralph Bashke.
Ralph Bashke. 2 weeks in a row, we've talked about Ralph Bashke for unrelated reasons.
Yeah. Well, just watch. On Facebook, you're going to get a lot of sponsored posts about Ralph Bashke now.
I don't mind. I wouldn't mind that. It's better than adult diapers. I'd rather people think you're into weird cartoons and you have incontinent issues. He is Israeli also. This woman married the king of Jordan and then got a checker placed upon her head because that made her a queen. She didn't get a checker placed on her head. That was my attempt at a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure you get a crown instead of a checker.
Yes.
And you probably don't wear the crown that often. It's just ceremonial.
Also, you when you play checkers, you get your king, not queen. So,
But I grew up with girls, so we always said that they were being queened instead of being kings.
Oh,
it was just a little thing.
What do you mean you grew up with girls?
I mean, I grew up with Sylvie and Holly. They're growing up with me.
Yeah, they didn't grow up. I'm just saying, what are you talking about? You have brothers, right?
No, I have a sister, too, but we didn't do that growing up, but that's what I did with the girls.
All right. I forget the question now.
This woman, who was the Queen of Jordan.
Oh, wait, yeah, she's American, right?
She's either Israeli or Palestinian, according to the quiz.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's Palestinian.
Yes, Palestinian. Her name's Queen Reina.
Mm-hmm.
Final question. This guy is the lead singer of Kiss.
What's he now? Hold on for a second.
Okay.
The answer would be Paul Stanley. He's a lead singer. But Gene Simmons did some songs too. Paul Stanley sang more of the songs.
Oh. See, now.
But Gene Simmons, I know, actually is.
Now I'm revealing that I don't know enough about Kiss mm-hmm. to have made that.
I had the feeling you did. I think mean Gene Simmons.
Yes, it was Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
And I knew they all sang. I didn't realize that Paul Stanley was the bigger singer. And I read so much Chuck Klosterman stuff talking about Kiss, but it just hasn't sunk in.
Mm-hmm.
I just enjoy...
Well, I think Gene Simmons is the one who's more associated as like the face of Kiss.
Yeah.
I think because he had the cooler makeup.
Right. But I enjoy people talking about guilty pleasures, things that they love and hate and can't defend, but will spend 30,000 words trying to defend. What's your guilty pleasure?
Probably wrestling, right?
Good answer. Yeah. Yeah, I guess mine would be comic books. I don't know. Has it come up that I enjoy comic books?
With all the comic book movies, is that still a guilty pleasure?
It's a different sort of guilty pleasure because I can't really talk to my wife about comics anymore because she gets bored very easily, and it'll take me about 45 minutes to get bored. And like once a year on my birthday, she'll say, "Okay, you can tell me about Darkhawk for 10 minutes. I was like, okay, great. So it started off as like a Spider-Man thing where he got an amulet and it transformed him.
Is there anybody you have in your life that you can talk comics on this level with?
Oh, yeah, my brother, Sean.
He's just as into it as you?
Yeah. But the reason why it's now a new sort of guilty pleasure is because everyone in the world, movie-wise, is trying to make their own comic universes. And I feel like if you want to go to movies nowadays to see big movies, you need to sit and listen to the conversation that I'm subjecting people to.
Mm-hmm. You're the one who's really getting enjoyment out of the comic book movies. You're noticing all the little, like, you know.
But I'm also realizing how badly they're made. And I want to tell people, I'm sorry society has turned into this. I'm sorry society has turned into pleasing me on and no one else.
Look at it this way. I feel like they make more of an effort now at comic book movies than they used to.
Yeah, and they look much better than they did. But we could be telling lots of other stories. We don't need to tell it via the superhero vein.
There are a lot of superhero movies, you're right.
Yeah. And I realize it's because that they look good and you can spend a lot of money on them and you get a lot of money back.
Will the superhero bubble burst for films?
I hope so. I really hope so. Like maybe like in 20 years it'll be like Westerns. Well, there'll be like one superhero movie every 5 years. And there'll be lots of stories like, oh, the superhero film's coming back. Like, you can't make a Western nowadays without like stories about how the Western is coming back. Like, you know, yeah. It's one. There's one movie. It's not a trend. Wild West didn't start a trend of movies of Westerns coming back.
Like, even though you're...
Unforgiven didn't
either. Even though you're a comic book fan, it sounds like you're hoping this will happen. It seems weird.
Yes. Because there's only so many good comic book stories.
I picture there's like a bunch of like really like obscure ones that you really want. Like why are they not doing that guy?
Yeah, that's what I would love to see a couple years down the road. With someone like Darkhawk, who I brought up before, who, as a character, he's not bad, but if you made a list of, like, the 900 best Marvel characters, he's not on the list. I happen to grow up reading his comics, so for me, it's special, but...
Is there any... Will you read any, like, piece of crap comic and not care?
No. But what Marvel ends up doing is they tie it in to the other storyline. So if you want to read Spider-Man and then he goes into Piece of Crap comic, you need to then buy the Piece of Crap comic to follow the story.
How many comics do you buy a week?
I don't.
Hmm.
Which is...
I'm not buying this.
I have a service, Marvel Unlimited, where I can read whatever I want, but just nothing in the last 6 months.
So you're always 6 months behind.
Yeah. But I'm years behind with
that service. How many do you usually read a week?
Like 30.
Oh.
And I'm not even making a dent in terms of what they're putting up in there because they put up old stuff also. I feel like I should cut this out because we're no longer talking about 1917 at all.
I'm kind of interested in this. Sometimes I think of you as my friend and sometimes I think of you as like a sociology project I'm working on.
And that concludes this week of 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. Join us next week for a huge week when we talk about the Russian Revolution. Until then...
I feel we already did that, didn't we?
It's all year long.
Okay.
All year long is the Russian Revolution. Until then, da tovarich. And ahoy hoy.